K-E-8-W-U-O, Ying, you're picking me up? K-E-8-W-U-O, K-E-8-L-A-X, loud and clear. Oh, very cool. It's working. I like it. Yeah, I don't know. I just felt, we're talking about camping and dogs and all that, and I figured we'd give everybody a break over there on Statewide 1. So hopefully it's okay to be over here.
Well, from my understanding, Statewide 1 and Statewide 2 are open for regular use. It's the event panels that are not, so I would assume that's correct. But I'm sure if it's not, somebody will pop in and let us know.
Yeah, that's my understanding, too. I just feel bad taking up all that, taking over Statewide 1 that long. But, what can you do? We're trying to have a conversation. It'd be nice if, everybody had like a P25 radio that we could talk on a little bit more locally without involving the whole state. But nothing works quite as well as DMR as of yet, especially in my neck. So I definitely love the DMR system and appreciate being able to use it. I definitely don't want to be seen as abusing it or using it too much. So.
Oh, I completely agree with you. As soon as you mentioned it, I definitely had no issues with it. And especially because, that's how the repeaters are set up, is that you can have two, simultaneous conversations across each time slot. So that's should be perfectly fine. And like Tim was saying, switching over is something that might have been in the works. So, initial contact and then switch over is even, I would assume, even fine. But, once we hear more. But we could keep doing this even, just as a pre let's not cause trouble kind of thing. Back over to you.
Yeah, I just try not to make waves other than radio waves, if you know what I mean. Trying to keep everybody happy and not bore everybody too. So something we could have done the other day when you had the choo-choo train is we could have just switched over to Statewide 2 and left Statewide 1 open for anyone that wanted to monitor. And, yeah, I don't know. We have to remember what our options are and what we can do and try to be as accommodating of everyone as possible and not tie up all the bandwidth. And so, yeah, I think this is a good, happy compromise, hopefully. If not, hopefully someone will let us know.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I was looking into Bluetooth speaker mics, and it appears like BTEC offers a speaker mic that's only about $60. Bluetooth push-to-talk for the UV Pro Series radios. So I'm curious if that qualifies for the Pro DMR version. Looks like a fairly decent radio, and I kind of like that because having your own battery power for the microphone probably gives you fairly decent audio.
Yeah, for sure. That would be awesome. I had the website pulled up a little bit ago, and then I started looking at other stuff. Yeah, that would be pretty sweet. I don't know. I had all these results for the DMR, and now they all went away. Okay, I think I found it. But yeah, I know there is a Bluetooth speaker mic for the UV Pro, the $170 analog radio. But like you said, I don't know if that would work for the DMR version, but I don't see why it wouldn't. So yeah, I don't. But once again, it kind of defeats the purpose. Is like, you want the wired one, Yeah, I mean, you don't want the wired one, but you might want the wired one for the counterpoise, you know. But I guess if you're not worried about that, then having a wireless speaker for deployments and being able to mount that to your vest would be awesome to not have that wire there, because that would just simplify the setup a little bit. Over to you.
Yeah, I agree. Like this radio, well, I mean, in all fairness, the DMR 6x2 from VTech has the K1 plug, so I actually do still have a folding mic that would work with it that's not Bluetooth. But, yeah, I'm still trying to figure out if this radio is capable of it, because if it is, awesome. You know, I might look into this as an option. And I'll probably still pick up the DM32 just because it's so cheap. And it sounds pretty decent, but yeah, I'm in the process of attempting. This is KEOX. Back over to you, Ben.
Yeah, I'm on VTech's website, and I scrolled through all their listed accessories for that DMR radio, and I think I came across the QHM22 speaker mic with the K connector, which I believe isn't that like the Kenwood connector? I think that's what the K stands for, but I'm no expert on those connectors. But yeah, so it does look like it has that as an accessory, but they're not showing the Bluetooth speaker. But what I should do is go to the accessories and look for that specific thing and see if it says what radios it's rated for. So that's what I'll do.
Just for experiment purposes, I've dropped my power down. How copy?
Sounds just like you did before. Sounds just fine, loud and clear.
I will say that the receiver on this radio is really, really good, and transmits really good too. I'm sitting inside the building. Obviously, I'm 22 in Gratiot, so I'm not too far from the machine, but still on low power. I think it was 2 watts, 5 watts, and 10 watts, I think, was the high, medium, low on this radio.
Nice. Yeah, I forget what mine is. It used to be in low by default. I think that's how Wally had it. And then one day I noticed that I was struggling a couple times to get in and out of places, and I looked at the top of my screen and it had that owl up there. And I was like, well, wait a minute, I wonder if I switch that to H, if that would help. And it has. So I believe I went in the code plug and changed it, but I still have the option to change it, you know, on the fly. But I'm looking at VTech BS22. It looks like it's 4 GMRS Pro and UV Pro series radios. So now it's just a matter of, is that DMR a UV Pro? But I don't think it is. I think it's a DMR Pro. So I don't know. It still remains to be seen. Boy, they don't really make it obvious.
Well, and that's kind of the trick. Like the UV Pro has the ability to transmit and receive audio over Bluetooth, where like my TID radio TDH3, it has Bluetooth programming capabilities, and I believe I can pair up a push-to-talk button, but it's only Bluetooth for controlling functions, not for audio.
That's interesting. Weird. You would think that, like, I would have kind of thought like a Bluetooth speaker like that would work for any of their Bluetooth enabled radios. because it should be pretty much the same protocols inside the radio for transmitting audio and controls and all that. So it would seem to me that the BTEC BS-22 would and should work for the GMR variant, but I don't know.
Yeah, that would probably be something that I would have to ask them, like actually send them an email and inquire about it. But I do know that it's a fairly new thing for Bluetooth radios to actually have audio, and that was something I was looking at with the UV Pro, is that I could actually hook up my helmet Bluetooth to it and also pair up a push-to-talk to put on my handlebars, and I could actually do radio while riding my motorcycle.
Nice. That would be sweet. And when you said helmet, I was like, wait, what do you got a helmet in radios for? Wait, are you one of those doomsday preppers? But then when you talked about the motorcycle, then I understood. But cool. Very cool. That would be really nice to be able to, especially to talk to people in your, you know, group, you know, that you're riding with. One thing that I am finding is that the BS-22 wireless microphone does work with the GMRS Pro and the UV Pro, but so far I haven't found anything that said that it worked with the DMR Pro. Which it bugs me because I don't feel like the name of it should be DMR Pro. It's gotta, and I don't want to use 6-2. You know, like, what the heck kind of name is that? I don't know. Maybe don't buy that radio just because it's stupid.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of these radios are UHF, VHF, but some of the DMRs are UHF only. This radio, so far, I haven't had a lot of talk time, but it seems like the analog side of it's kind of janky, but maybe not. I think Tim's had some experience with it, and because he had asked me earlier if I was talking to him on the FBA from this radio, so maybe he's had some experience with it, but being at home, I wasn't able to key up any of the repeaters, so I don't know necessarily what that's about. But if I could find a handheld that had the option of Bluetooth that would do analog and DMR, like an HT one and all kind of thing, so I could use it on the bike, have it in my pack kind of thing, that would be awesome. But I don't know if I'll find a one-size-fits-all option like that.
Yeah, that was one of the issues I had when I went to get a Motorola. It's like I wanted a Motorola that did it all because that's kind of how the APX is. It does VHF, UHF, and 7-800 megahertz. And so I wanted a Motorola DMR radio that did at least VHF and UHF. But there's not one in existence that does that. And I kind of thought I would buy the one you're looking at, and I think I told Wally that I would give Motorola some time to get their act together and make one, and he basically said that he doesn't think that they will, and that they're more of a business radio, and that you would probably get one that either does VHF or one that does UHF. And that they're not going to make a dual bander because it doesn't really fit into the business model. You know, businesses are just going to get a single band and make that their radio for their entire staff, and there's no need for a VHF, UHF dual bander. And so I think that's why Motorola doesn't do any, there's not one DMR radio that's VHF and UHF on the DMR side. And I don't even think the repeaters are either, which surprises me a little bit too. But definitely there's no HTs that do it. And so I wouldn't be too surprised if, you know, you run into that with other manufacturers. But I do think it's really nice to have something that can do both. But I don't know. I guess that's what they say about, you know, what do they say? It's like a, it's like when you can do it all, but you're a master of nothing. You know, like you can, you're a jack of all trades, but master of none. That's what it is. And so that's kind of probably how, you know, BTEC or a similar dual band radio is it's, it can do it all, but it's not the best at any one of them. But if it works, then you really can't complain. So I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. But if you base it off of the actual full quote, a jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one. So I get exactly what you're saying. If I could find something like that, especially because like the Bluetooth thing, that really is a huge thing. But now that I've come into the DMR and use it so much, having a radio that could do DMR with the Bluetooth and still have my, you know, analog capabilities. I mean, I have other radios that will do analog. I've got this nice Yaesu in the car, which I will not complain about. I love this radio. It's small, compact, does 50 watts, and, you know, it's even got a send and receive APRS. So that's really cool. And actually, were we talking about having APRS set up as well as Winlink?
Yes. Yes, that was something that we're gonna, yeah, on November 1st, if that's what you're asking, yeah, we're gonna do both of those simultaneously. And get that up and running. So that'll be awesome. And I think both the UV Pros and all that do the APRS. And then, so I mean, that's just going to be awesome to finally have a Winlink gateway. So I really look forward to that. I'm super excited about that. And then to get the APRS going too, that'll be sweet. I hate how close APRS is to ARPSC. That's like a tongue twister beyond all tongue twisters.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really see a huge value in APRS, especially for, I mean, I guess it's kind of cool to automatically send those location packets. But on the same note, there's no privacy. So I'll turn it on when I want it and then turn it off when I don't want it, because if I leave it on that radio, the minute the radio turns on, it starts transmitting GPS location. So that part of it, I'm kind of eh. And there was a comment mentioned on how to add APRS into our tracking, and I thought that was a horrible, horrible idea. But I'm not going to comment because, you know, I don't know if it's a good idea to let the world know where we're at.
Yeah, that's a valid point. It's kind of a pickle that we're in because there seems to be a large push to know where everybody is and to see it on a map. And I don't know if we really need that, and I don't know how important that really is. We can infer someone's location. They left location A and went to location B, and so if they went AWOL, we're going to know they're somewhere along that route, which does leave a lot of, you know, potential places. But then at the same time, like, there's not much we can do. You know, even if we know where they are, we can't really, I mean, there's only so many of us in that situation. It might be better to call, you know, authorities to look or something. I don't know. I don't know what the what the end goal of that whole endeavor is, of knowing where everyone is at all times. And I don't know if I see a lot of the value. I see a little bit of like privacy concerns, especially in, I hate to say it, ResGrid. It's like, I don't know if everybody that joins APRC wants to have their location shared all the time. And I don't think it is. And we found that it doesn't do a very good job of sharing locations, especially in real time, which is probably good in that kind of privacy concern. I would like to see it kind of share location only when deployed and not when you're not. I don't know how that works yet. I like the idea of, you know, I deploy the person from their home to location A. Then I know they're either in route or they're at one of those two other locations. That kind of narrows it down. And then you kind of know the point A to point B, like what path you would take to get there. So it kind of makes it doable, where you can still find someone if they go missing. So I don't know. I need to sit down and talk to these guys about how we want to deploy and what it looks like. But I need to hand it over to you because I'm running.
Sounds like you ran out of time right when you said that. I agree. And it looks like the app. It looks like the app allows. It looks like it doesn't update location until you put on scene or, you know, responding. It doesn't look like it's live. I mean, it might be borderline, but they probably do that so that they're not tying up servers. We'll see. And, you know, like they said, it's just something to experiment with. If it's not something that's going to be conducive to the situation, then maybe other options will be explored. I completely get it, and I'm all for it either way. I do see the issue of, you know, if something happens, you're going to have a lot of people checking in that aren't going to be, you know, necessarily a part of the team. But I don't know if those people would be deployed by us at that point either. Back over to you.
Yeah, I would kind of think they might, you know. But I kind of still stand by, like, our realization, or at least maybe my realization, of deployment really starts, a deployment system should really start on paper. Paper and pen, because if the system fails, then you need to be able to deploy people still with paper and pen. And so what we need to do is develop a system that works off of that and then build it into, you know, somehow incorporate that into ResGrid, the logging system that I made, which is very similar to ResGrid in the sense that I can load calls in it. I can add, you know, locations of people's homes. I can add locations of the where the call is. I can deploy people to there. It shows their location when they're at home, and then it moves their location to their call when they arrive on scene, which is very similar to what we're seeing ResGrid do. So it's actually already very similar and very comparable, but it also has all the pins on the map for DMR repeaters. It has the pins on the map for analog repeaters. It's specific to our county. It's custom built from the ground up, which I like because, you know, I was talking to you guys about ERP systems and how I struggle with them because it's like a one-size-fits-all application that is built by some large programming company and sold to businesses to solve all their issues. But the problem is it's a one-size-fits-all program, and it doesn't always implement very cleanly into the workflow of the company, and then often involves a lot of training and a lot of adaptation to get it to work. And that's kind of how I feel about ResGrid. It takes a little bit of doing to get it to do what you need it to do. I would like to see if it can do CSV imports for calls, if I can upload like a list of all the gas stations, for instance, in a certain area. You know, that would be something of major value that I would like to see. And Dave did ask us to make a list of tasks. I'm going to pass it to you.
Yeah, and that kind of goes along with playing with new software, kind of like I am with that software. You know, I'm sure a lot of these programs have options that we probably don't even realize at the current moment because we're, you know, so new at playing with them. And with ResGrid, I'm not sure because I know that running the radio and being net is a fast-paced thing. How fast is it to actually input a call and dispatch someone through that program? This is KE8LAX.
KE8WUO. And that's kind of one of my holdups that I, you know, when you pull up the screen for ResGrid and you make a call, there's a lot of things that you need to fill out before you hit submit. And some of them might be optional, but to do that for every person that you have to check in and manually type in an address on every one of those calls is going to take a significant amount of time. And that's why I like the idea of, you know, a comma-separated import, something that we can pull from our local database of gas stations, warming centers, cooling centers, nursing homes, grocery stores, and stuff like that, even repeater sites. But then ideally, you guys in the field have those same, you know, files, so that I don't have to tell you the exact address of a place. I can just tell you, you know, location 53, and then you'll deploy to location 53 by looking at your chart and getting the address off of that, and that'll save us a lot of radio traffic time and make it a lot easier. That won't be the case for people that aren't part of APRC, so then you will have to be giving addresses over the air. But I don't know. We really do need to find out what deployment should look like. But I actually find a hard time doing that because it seems like it's going to be one of those things that I have to do and then I have to present to everybody because honestly, it seems like everybody else has their own chores they're working on, and that's not their priority, but it is mine. So I will probably have to find out what deployment looks like. I'd like to work with Wally on it more because it is his territory, but I'm not sure that he has the time to get into it and visualize a dispatch system. I have a pretty good visual idea of what I think it should look like, but I probably need to do the proof of concept thing, come up with something, and then present it to the guys, and then hopefully I can get them on board, because that's usually the tried and true method I implement and have success with.
Yeah, I agree. You do a lot of work. Even like Tim said at the meeting, how do you find time to do all this and get it all together? And hopefully that system that you built is something that you can integrate into the day-to-day and automate it a bit and, you know, make it faster for everyone. Because, I mean, again, this is a, you know, a volunteer basis thing. And, you know, you kind of don't want to make it a second job per se. Although it is fun, and I'm enjoying it, but, you know, once everything gets, you know, set and a routine gets set and everything kind of gets set in place, hopefully it becomes a little more streamlined.
Yeah, that's my goal, is to make it as streamlined and as easy and painless as possible, and I want to make it so that it's kind of easy to digest and a lot of people can do it. And then as far as that automation stuff we showed and talked about on Friday, I actually had that done for probably 2 weeks, but I needed the right moment to bring it up and show people. And I actually proposed that to them a long time ago. And, you know, when you propose things to people, they tend to say, no, we'll just do it manually and keep it simple. And it's like, okay, you could, but, you know, okay, you know, okay, I guess. And then I just, you know, went ahead and did it. And then when they saw it, you know, it's exactly my point. You know, it's like whenever you try to show somebody something, or whenever you try to propose something to somebody, or try to tell someone your idea, they don't visualize it like you do, you know. And so that's why, you know, more often than not, I have to make that proof of concept to show someone, because that's when they'll really get behind it, you know. And it was actually where, like, I didn't know if I should even be working on that, because I didn't want to get in trouble, because it was already discussed that we weren't going to do that. But then when I presented it and showed them how easy it could be, then it kind of became, you know, maybe we should look at that. And, but that kind of goes with the territory. Is like, I don't, what I'm trying to get everybody to start to think is, you know, think, what is it? I have a book over here. I got to look at it. Algorithmic thinking is like everything can be an algorithm. You know, things that are very simple. Most of the processes and most of the paperwork we fill out is very algorithm. Like, it's really easy to get a computer algorithm to do it. And so we just have to think about how we can automate something, and then it can be done. And so it's not hard to do. It's what's hard is to picture it, you know, and imagine it, you know, and then implement it is also hard. But if I can get everybody to think in the algorithmic mindset, then I think good things will come.
Yeah, and I think you're right. If you can get more people to, you know, think, like you said, in an algorithmic way, you know, then the idea of streamlining stuff becomes less of a scary thought. And you also have to think of the people that are on my team, that, you know, a good chunk of them are used to the old way of doing things, and, you know, now we're introducing, you know, a new idea of technology, but not necessarily having to rely on that technology, and that can be a difficult comprehension sometimes. KELAX, back over to you, Joe.
Yeah, I think sometimes it also sounds like so far fetched and hard to achieve and unobtainable that it's easy to dismiss and give up on, you know. And for someone that finds great value in automating a lot of the simple things, I have another book over here, and it's Automate the Boring Stuff with Python. But it doesn't have to be Python, but the point is automate the boring stuff, the stuff that we don't need to be doing, you know, that doesn't need to take up our time. And what I find when you automate things is that, like, it provides value in the other areas of your, you know, experience or expertise, where now I don't have to spend all this time working on these spreadsheets. Now I can focus on, you know, organization. I can focus on, you know, all the other tasks in my to-do list and all the other, I mean, we all have a limited amount of bandwidth of what we can do for APRSC or even in our jobs and whatnot. And so if you can take some of that load and put it on the computer, which it's really good at doing those kind of things, and it's right here in front of us, and we all have these space age cutting edge devices that can calculate and do a lot of fancy stuff if you let it, you know. It's to me, it's a shame when people are doing things manually, and it's hard for me to watch, and I cringe, because it's like, man, this could be a lot easier, and we're very inefficient in the way that we're doing X, Y, and Z, and I'd really like us to do this, but it's really hard to get people on board when they don't see the vision, you know. So, but, you know, I don't know. I don't want to beat that dead horse, because I can talk about that all day long. Instead, what the best thing I find always is to just put your nose down and code. Just shut up, get out of your own way, and do what you have to do. And then you'll get your moment in the sun for everybody to see what you're doing. And then everybody likes it. And then you're like, ah, finally.
Well, nonetheless, I think you're doing a good job. The last net, being able to watch that table, just that alone, having to do that manually and type that in with paper, and you know, the amount of fields that you have in there that auto populate is just amazing. All you really need to know is the call sign. That's all you really need to hear on the radio. And everything else is kind of streamlined. And I love that. I was super impressed with that. And I appreciate you sharing it with me. You know, even though it was read-only, that's all I wanted to see. But that's really cool. And it seems like you've kind of went with that same approach with everything, and even your sheet, being able to tell, you know, who's checked in, how many times, that's awesome. And I'm sure you have that set up to populate through the old, yeah, you showed us. It's set up to populate through the net logs. That's amazing. And I kind of have a feeling that that kind of work, you know, might even start being shared with, like, you know, St. Clair and, you know, other counties, and that would even be cool too.
Yeah, and that's kind of part of my burden is when I make these things, I really try to think about scalability, you know, and so it's like there's a lot of thought that goes into these databases that I make that go into the fields that are in the database, because there's a little bit of bad habits, I would say, of, you know, if you, I don't want to be too specific, but there's some things that I see we're putting in our databases that, let's say there's values that are like, they're two different values, you know, and it should really be in two different columns rather than in one column, because then that column can become queryable. And so I need to separate a lot of values from the way we're currently doing it and separate it into two different columns, so that way later on when we kind of are building our scalable system, that I can, you know, run a quick query to see who's got a GMRS call sign, who's got, you know, HF capabilities, who can get on 20 meters, you know, who can get on 40 meters. And I need all of that information kind of in some way to be able to be isolated so that I can do a quick query. I can keep it in a single column, but put it comma separated, but that gets a little sloppy because somebody might forget to put a comma in there. And so it's like, you risk a giant database, but the value that you get out of it, like the database kind of becomes it's unintelligible. Like there's so many columns and so many fields that it's almost unmanageable. Like you can't really look at it and find what you need. But that's where the queries really come in handy, is then you run a query on the people that you have and what their capabilities are, and you get a tailored report just for what you're looking for. And then that's kind of the way to do it. And so if I can get, I have to baby step everything, you know, and because I don't want to make sweeping changes, but I do need to keep scalability in mind. And that's something I really want to do, is try to bring other counties into it, because I could see, you know, situations where I'm going to put a quarter in. I can see situations where multiple counties need to respond to an incident. And, you know, I actually saw some pretty crazy footage from downtown, you know, Detroit, Wayne County recently. I think it was in the No Kings thing. And there was a lot of guys in yellow vests that were trying to break up fights and whatnot. And I know those guys in yellow vests most likely are volunteers trying to help. And they're just like us, and, you know, because we wear the yellow vest when we deploy and we do things. And so it's like they're not authorities, they're not, you know, anybody. And so with the way these protests are going, with the way the counties are, I see a real need for people to, I see a real need for these counties to enter, you know, it's just like the police with the interoperability. It's like we need our APRSD groups to have interoperability, and we need to make all these databases interoperable, and we need to get everybody kind of on a similar scheme and working in a similar way. You know, I'm not saying my way is the way, but right now I'm the only one paving the way, at least in Macomb County. And I shouldn't even say that, because that's not true. But I'm the only one maybe thinking algorithmically on how to automate things and how to, you know, build scalability into our system. But there's a lot of people looking at how everything works. But I would love to get people on board, but it's hard, because I have to somehow articulate my vision to them and show them what I see, and that's not easy to do.
Agreed, but you know, with what I've seen, you have a good way with words, and you have a good way with explaining your systems and your thought process. Let's be honest. I mean, granted, don't get me wrong. I've got a good idea on automation and electronics and, you know, how things work and how things can work. But I'm nowhere near on your level, and I can understand it. So you got a good way of explaining it. So although it seems hard, you do a good job.
Yeah, I definitely try. I try to articulate it as best as I can. That, you know, it kind of all stems from my job, and also kind of being lazy. I've once heard somebody say, and I really believe it, is the best programmers are lazy people, because that's kind of how I got good at automation. Is I'd be sitting here at my desk trying to estimate jobs, and there would be simple things that I would be doing every day that seemed so mundane and so meaningless. And to have to repeat that task every day for every single thing, I found ways to automate, you know, certain little steps. And each automation is a stepping stone into a bigger system. It's like, you know, at first it started up with a call sign lookup, and now we're feeding data back into a database from our call sign lookup sheet. And then we're populating some of that data back to another public data sheet, you know, and so it's like we're slowly baby stepping into a system, and that's kind of how it happens. And you don't see it happening because it's kind of like, you know, a frog in boiling water type of thing, where, you know, slowly, you know, the frog doesn't realize it's being boiled, but eventually it dies because it's been boiled. But it's kind of how this is going to go, is we're going to slowly build the system one algorithm at a time. But yeah, I don't know. It all kind of stems from...
Well, just in the time that I've been aboard, there's been, you know, great strides with that, and, you know, making third place, even though everything was kind of a mess when we were doing the set. And I mean, like I said, in the time I've been around, it's been great strides. So that's awesome. And, you know, I think that I would have to agree with you on the, you know, once you build it, if someone else doesn't know what's going on in there, if something were to happen, or, you know, step away, or you got some family stuff, you could go out of state or something, if anything happens, I completely get that too. You know, then the system can become redundant, if anything, or I shouldn't say redundant, but become a brick if someone else doesn't know what's going on. It's K8LAX. Back over to you.
Yeah. So I kind of remembered where I was going with it. Is our IT department here, they've really locked down a lot of the scripts and a lot of the stuff. They will green light scripts for me, but I cannot test them before they green light. Like, they'll green light a test, you know, scripts, but then there's maybe a little nuance with it, and so then I need to put another help desk ticket in to have them greenlight it again. And it's kind of become so much of a nuisance to develop that I basically stopped, because they've effectively put a halt to any forward improvement. And so I love coding. I love scripting. I love the automation. I love being really good at Excel, and I've kind of gotten good at Google Sheets as well. But I think what happened is I got really good at Excel, and it basically taught me code and to think algorithmically. And then I started dabbling with other programming languages. Because I, you know, our IT department was always pushing us away from Excel's Visual Basic, because they are under the impression that it will be phased out, which they're probably right. And so I've been, you know, pushing myself in other directions, learning Python and PowerShell and a bunch of other programming languages. And it's all in an effort to stay relevant. And so that's kind of my goal. And when I can't really code here at work anymore, I need something to do, you know, in order to hone my skills. Because I don't want to just throw in the towel on automating and coding and, in that, so I need to continue beating the drum and ringing the bell, if you will. And so, in a way, APRSC has become my, you know, saving grace. It's given me a reason to automate. It's given me an avenue to hone my skills. It's given me, it's kind of like that. You know, like you have, everybody has, like, you know, people like to drink, people like to smoke. I've found that I like to code and I like to automate. There's nothing better than, I had to put another quarter in, but there's nothing better than, sitting down one day and saying, okay, for this aerospace tool, there's all these McMaster car items that I need to look up a price for. And then when you sit down and you spend more time than it would take you to Google all those part numbers to write a script that would web scrape the prices from McMaster Car's website, and you can do it in the push of a button, and Excel will open 20 web browsers and pull the prices for all 20 simultaneously, and you'll get the pricing in seconds for the next tool, and the next tool, and the next tool. You know, to me, there's no better reward than that right there. That is my fix. That's my addiction, you know. And so, I you walk away from work, or you walk away from coding, or, you know, APRC that day, feeling on top of the world, that, like, you just solved tons of work. I mean, that's entire people's jobs, is we've hired people that just look up part numbers to get prices for us, and that was my job too. You know, as an estimator, we didn't see the reason to withhold some of these people, and so it fell on me, and I don't have enough time to be Googling every single, you know, hundreds of McMaster car part numbers. So I do it with an algorithm now, and that provides so much bandwidth to my workflow. It's unbelievable, and it makes me feel great. Also, that's kind of where, you know, that's where it comes to, like, you know, the lazy people thing is, you know, when you can find a way to do something really effectively and easily that you don't need to be doing manually. To me, there's a lot of value in that, and that's not something that I want to walk away from. And so if APRSC is my, you know, out to code and to learn things and continue down that avenue of making myself useful and diverse, then I'll do it, even if I just throw it away. You know, it doesn't matter. It's not really about, you know, it's about the journey and learning, you know, is for me anyway. So I don't know. I'm like oddly motivated in that way. I just can't help it.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that your company doesn't have some sort of like test environment rather than red flagging everything and holding you up. But yeah, I think it's cool that you that's your kind of like pastime that you enjoy so much, and I'm glad that the group kind of allows you to do those things in your spare time, and even maybe not in your spare time. But I do have a question for you. Has this conversation been holding you up in your office? This is K8OX.
Yes and no. You know, I actually probably, when this is done, I'll leave. So it's really more or less been holding me from going home, but that's no worries. I have a good vantage point to a repeater from my office, and so I just figured I'd finish the conversation here in the office, and then once we wrap it up, I'd head home and then call it a day. But I also you know, this is kind of like a lonely endeavor, you know. I don't get to talk about code or, you know, like my passion in this sense ever, you know, to anyone. Nobody cares really, you know. So I don't mind. I enjoy talking about it. I enjoy sharing my ideas, and you know, it's a fun thing. So it's kind of like talking about your favorite hobby. You know, that's kind of, I guess, I have too many. You know, I like scuba diving, I like ham radio, and I like automation. And this is kind of cool because I get to talk about automation on ham radio. So, hey, you know, this is pretty awesome.
Yeah, unless, you know, here at PSC, you know, you get to kind of mix your hobbies in and actually do something good for the people when called upon. So that's awesome too. And honestly, I kind of enjoy when you show off your stuff, because it does honestly kind of amaze me. And you know, there's some people out there, you know, are probably like, oh well, you know, it's not a big deal. But I think it is actually a big deal, and some of that stuff's cool. And how you've achieved it, I still probably don't understand. Maybe one day I'll have you actually, I'll sit down with you and maybe you can kind of show me a deeper dive into it. But even still, I might not, pick it up. But I mean, either way, I'm glad that you can, enjoy it. And also I'm glad that you can actually share it with me and, actually talk. Like you said, you don't get to talk to very many people about it. And you know, that's kind of, I can relate to that. I can feel for that, you know, fairly often. Even with the ham radio stuff, there's a lot of people that are like, you know, that's for old people. Why do you even do that? Yeah, but it's actually kind of cool. And I mean, even the MI5 network, the fact that I can key up, and then I had to study, but the fact that I can key up and talk all the way up north, you know, even on 5.2 here, and talk all the way up north. That's an amazing thing, and the fact that you don't think it's amazing, well, that sucks for you. King LAX, back over to you, John.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's you know, I'm really thankful that I found, you know, APRSC, and that I found some way to be useful and slowly kind of working my way into, you know, hopefully making it better. And you know, I didn't really think it would work out. You know, it's kind of hard. You know, most of the time, it's almost impossible to work your way and incorporate your ideas. And that's kind of why I really appreciate Dave. You know, because he's been very accommodating and very trusting, and he's been awesome. You know, it's not every day that you find a leader that, you know, kind of says, go for it, do, you know, let's see what you can come up with. And I was just really surprised that he was able to, you know, was willing to, you know, provide that over and, you know, kind of give me a chance to show my value. And I was glad that he saw value in it, you know. And to me, it was really cool to get the QRZ API working. That was like a really big accomplishment, especially on the Google Apps, you know, platform. I never really dabbled with Google, but it was very similar to Excel in a lot of ways. And I first created a proof of concept using basically Excel formulas from a stale database. And then they saw a lot of value in that. And then we were noticing that, you know, oh, so-and-so got his call sign updated, and, oh, this guy checked in from Canada, and so we didn't, you know, he's not in the FCC database, and things were getting a little interesting with the stale database. And so I was like, well, let me see if I can do this better by using the QRZ API. And sure enough, you know, I got that fired up and working. And you actually haven't seen nothing yet if you like that form, because that form is actually probably the most basic of all of them that I have right now. All the stuff that I have in Excel is far superior. It does DMR IDs. You know, you just put in a call sign, or you can put in a DMR ID, and it'll get the call sign, and then it, once it gets the call sign from radio ID, then it uses that call sign to look up in QRZ and gets all information. Put a quarter in. So that's really cool. And it's really cool too, because like when I get check-ins like during the set, I can tell at a glance who's got DMR IDs. And because, you know, I get their DMR ID when I put in their call sign. And so I can kind of tell just by looking at the database, if these guys don't have DMR IDs, there's no point in even asking them to go over to the DMR side and talk to Wally, because they don't even have DMR IDs for their call sign. So that is really awesome. Because you get a lot of, like, data is beautiful. Data tells you a lot of things, and you can get data to do a lot of things for you. You can infer things off of data. And so, I don't know. I really like these Excel spreadsheets. I don't think anyone really has gotten a good look at them, especially the set log. And I'd really like to have a moment with Dave and show him what I actually had going for the set, because I don't think he saw what I saw. You know, I don't think anyone knew really what was going on with that set log, because that thing was filling out my ICF 214 forms. It was for every person that checked in. I got their check-in time on the ICF 214. I got anytime they would call with a status update, I would type it into the database, and it, you know, like I have a little button next to their call sign, and it would open up a pop-up window, and I could type in their status, and then it would put that in the 214 form, and then save it into the database for that call. So then I could look at that call and see everything that happened and everything that was reported at that specific call. And then I could just run down the list. And so I really think I could have deployed people really fast and really effectively using that. But I had to hand it over to Wally.
I don't know if there's a way of setting this up, but I wonder if it would be, possible to actually hook your computer up, you know, do kind of like a private meeting thing at a normal meeting place, and actually hook up your computer to the projector and actually demonstrate it for all command or leadership, however you want to consider it, and actually do a demonstration with you at hand at the computer. Something blown up so that everybody can see it. I wonder if that wouldn't be a good option to actually show it off.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be awesome. I would love to sit down, because that's kind of what I need. Is like I would like to get a little bit of a groupthink going on, you know, and show the guys kind of my process and the direction I'm going. And then I would also like to get like some group help where, you know, I would like to deploy people from our group to gas stations and find out information about every gas station in Macomb County. Do you guys have a backup generator? You know, do you guys have a way to provide power, you know, to your pumps? How long can you run, you know, on backup power? And I'd like to have all of that stuff in a database. And then same with, like, you know, shopping centers and stuff like that. But for me to gather all that data would be really hard. But if we can use our group to go out and, you know, stop at the gas station, add that status to a live database that everybody can see and add to, like, there, I see a lot of value in that, but then that's also maybe a little bit of a little over the top, maybe a little bit of a pipe dream. Maybe we don't need to do that, but I kind of feel like maybe we should. But then, once again, it's kind of a stale database, and maybe the generator doesn't work, and we think that they can because the database says they can, and we send people there and they can't. And, you know, it's a little bit, you know, that's where I'd like some input from the rest of the team, you know, and say, like, how do we want to handle this, you know? Because I would like a list of all the gas stations. I would like a list of all the shopping centers. I'd like a list of the cooling centers, the warming centers. I'd like a put a quarter in. I'd like a list of, you know, all the main repeaters and, you know, the sites of, you know, our deployments, you know, potential deployment areas where we could potentially end up. But then we also need to have, you know, the ability to manually input deployments if we're going to, you know, some other place that's not on that list, and how we want to handle all that and what that looks like. And, like, I have ideas, and I will shape that, but I don't want to be the final say, and that's where we're heading. or I will be the final say up until I show everybody, and then everybody will have a whole bunch of ideas on how to do it differently, and I have to change everything. That's the other thing I don't look forward to, but I'm kind of used to. So I don't know. It's something that probably should get done, but I don't know if I can convince enough people to do it.
Well, I see value in, you know, knowing where the gas stations are, knowing where the shopping centers are, warming centers, churches that do stuff like that on a volunteer basis, you know, things along those lines. I think that's invaluable information, especially because, you know, depending on the emergency, that would also include, like, tornado shelters, you know, stuff along those lines. I think that's very good. I think as far as going to places to find out if they have backup power or not, I think that would have to be on a case-to-case basis because, like you said, you don't know if it's going to work at that given point in time. You know, did they not test the generators, especially because gas stations in particular are, you know, privately owned. It ends up being a situation where maybe they let it sit too long and the carburetor got gunked up and now they can't, you know, power up even a couple of their pumps or something along those lines. I know places like Menards here at Hall Road, they've got a big Cummins or Caterpillar or something sitting out in the parking lot, and that gets test started, I think, monthly. But, yeah, I think that would have to be a case by case, emergency by emergency situation. But having locations and knowing their function is definitely more important and probably invaluable data that should be input into the system. This is KE8. Oh yeah, it's back over to you, Ben.
Yeah, I agree, and completely agree. You know, I think that the generator, I think, idea would be nice to know that they, there was a potential for them to have or to be able to run on backup power. And then it would be nice to know if, like, this one does not have the potential for them to be on backup power as of this date, you know. And so I see value in it. But also, I don't want to get hung up on that because, like you said, I think the locations are primary. But then that still presents a hurdle of, like, you know, you pull up Google, and even when I was looking for deployments for the set, I pulled up Google and I was finding locations that were on the map where when you pull up Street View, there's not a building there. But I don't know that there's not a building there. I just know that when Street View drove by, there wasn't one, you know. And so it gets a little tricky where, like, I don't want to visit every building, you know. And so if there's a lot of people in New Haven and they can confirm, you know, this address exists and is open and currently operating, then we can put it on the list and mark it as a valid, viable option. But if this gas station, like there's a gas station at in between 14 Mile and 13 Mile on Van Dyke that has been closed for probably 5 years, never pumping gas. It's just like an abandoned gas station. I wouldn't want that, to, you know, and so it's like I kind of need to know, is it actually open and working, and can people verify that for me so that this database is usable, you know. So, but I'm hearing a machine sounding like it's destroying itself out in the shop, so I'm going to go check on that, we'll have to pick this up a little bit later. I think we've probably... my radio is a little warm, so we probably carry down a bit, and I'm sure you got stuff to do too. So I will hand it over to you, but I'll probably be clear on your final.
It sounds good. Hopefully.
All righty. Well, you have a good one, sir. 73s for now. KEA WUO.